there is this sort of bubble of rookies that were awesome, and we know historically that some of them are going to kind of suck this year, and nobody knows who they are. And Sano could be one of those guys. He could hit 40 home runs, or he could end up back in the minors in June. And I think there have been so many rookies that have done so well. I think people are forgetting the basement for some of these guys. I'm taking Ortiz over Sano this year. I don't think the expected drop off with Ortiz is enough to make me not do it.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 74 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me as always is Mike Janella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing on Justin Upton signs evening?
Pretty good. How are you, Brett? George?
I'm all right. It's just another day in the stark reminder that the Mets owners are complete and utter shit.
You know, what occurred to me is we talk a lot less about weather since George has joined the show and, you know, Mal left, which is kind of weird because we're supposed to get a big blizzard this weekend, but it's also weird because George is up in New England where I think it has been snowing like on and off all winter. Am I correct, George?
Yeah, well, you know what it is there was a little bit more regional diversity with Mao on the show because he's in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
So we're all on the East Coast, so it's kind of pointless to talk about the weather because it's pretty much the same.
It is colder up there, though. I mean, you have been getting some snow, right?
So even the Justin Upton news can't warm my heart because it's going to be 13 degrees tomorrow. it's going to be brutally cold. It's one of those days where you just don't want to go outside. You go outside for like 30 seconds and it feels like you've been out there for 3 hours. So not going to be fun. That's
pretty much winter.
Yeah.
Winter's terrible. It's not fun.
Yeah. Not my favorite.
Can I opt out of winter?
Only after 2 years.
Damn it.
So we are rolling through the positions here at Flags Fly Forever and at Baseball Prospectus. We are going and talking about first baseman tonight, which is way more fun than talking about catchers. Without any further ado, you can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. It's two S's and two L's. You can email us at flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. And rate and review us on iTunes and the like. We will take a very quick break and we will be right back to talk big burly sluggers. And we are back. So as we started to do last week and as we did last season, we are going to kick off our first base talk by taking a really brief look at some valuations from last year and seeing if we learned anything. If we didn't, then we'll probably move on pretty quickly. But we're going to start with the American League again. So, Mike, since these are your valuations, let's kick it out to you. When was the last time was it surprising that there wasn't a single first baseman in the American League that earned $30?
Yes, although if you look at how things shook out, it's not too surprising just because no one to reach that plateau for a position that doesn't steal, and it's especially true in the American League, where Carlos Santana was the only guy who broke 10 steals. You need to get those steals to kind of get past there. And if you don't do that, you need to have the batting average. And you had a big group of guys that had neither. Prince Fielder managed to hit over 300, but the power that he displayed a few years ago wasn't really there. Edwin Encarnacion, who led the pack in earnings at 29, you know, he hit 277, which was good, but didn't offer very much in batting average value. And Chris Davis, who also earned 29, he was almost batting average neutral. So despite those 47 home runs and 117 runs batted in and being a three-category monster, he just couldn't quite get there. So I was a little surprised, just because I think in 2014, and I didn't do the back and forth with the valuations, there was less power. We saw a bit of a power spike in real baseball and fantasy baseball last year. So as a result, that kind of tamped down some of these values as well. I think that's where the surprise was, is that there was a bit of a rallying point for hitters, and where it affected valuations, you could really see this at first base in the American League.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that I thought was really interesting is that you look at those two names at the top that you expect, Encarnacion and Davis, who both earned 29. The name right below them, Eric Hosmer, earned $28, and he hit 18 homers, had 7 steals, but he was very, very well-rounded. Counting stats were great. He was 98 runs scored, 93 RBI, and he almost hit 300. What does his season tell you, if anything, about how we should view some of the non-traditional first basemen in 2016?
Well, it tells me more, and this is kind of the same story every year. It tells me more in a deeper format or in AL only about not undervaluing guys like this. I do think in a standard mix format, you want to be careful not to extrapolate this too much and say, oh, you know, Hosmer's almost as good as Encarnacion or almost as good as Davis, because I would prefer to get that power and to maybe get the batting average from somewhere else than having a well-rounded player like Hosmer. I'm not getting the home runs or getting, well, not really the steals, or getting the home runs from another source. And I like Eric Hosmer, and I was wrong about him last year, and I think he's going to be fine again this year. I just want to kind of caution against looking at these values that we're talking about and just reminding people that they're AL only. I think there's a little bit more separation when you get into mix, and when you get into to standard mix, I think there's even more separation to consider.
Yeah. So George, what and anything jump out to you here in looking at these?
Yeah, Mike touched on it, but the power uptick when we did our categorical breakdown series at Baseball Prospectus, that was one of the big things that we saw as a major trend last year that developed. Big surge in home runs, and I think that impacted first base more than a lot of other positions. But I was more struck by the replacement level guys that sort of emerged that had next to no value coming into the year that really put up some solid numbers from an earnings standpoint. A guy who stands out to me is Kendrys Morales. I mean, he was 394th in ADP last year, and he ended up earning $24 in AL only last year, which was the same amount as Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols. So I think sort of the floor of replacement level guys is a bit higher than I think it was maybe in the past. You know, there are even guys like Mark Canha on here who earned nearly $20 and were, you know, usable guys in mono leagues that I don't think that was the case maybe a few years ago, where there were so many guys of that caliber who emerged.
Yeah, I think, and we're going to get to this when we get into the tiers this year. We've talked in the past couple of years about how, you know, everyone thinks of first base as a really deep position, and we went through a stretch over the past 2 or 3 years where I really don't think the position was as deep as people gave it credit for, but this year, I think it is and then some. I don't know whether we'll get into more of that later, but as a general rule of thumb, are you guys in agreement on that? Or does that seem crazy?
No, I think that's right. It's definitely deeper. I ran through this for the ale only article that I was putting up for Friday. There was some bounce back, and I would say the other way. It's not even so much that it's deeper to me this year. I think that it was a little thinner in 2014, and 2015 kind of saw a healthy bounce back to what we've kind of seen in the past.
Yeah, I think you can almost go 12 to 15 deep at the position and end up with a real quality starter, which I don't think you can say that about a lot of the other positions, especially on the infield.
Yeah, and it's really gonna have an interesting effect on the draft positions of some of the big guys that we'll get to. But moving on to the National League, we'll cover this quickly. Mike, what anything different hit your eye in the National League than in the American League? I know we have some more well-rounded options in the National League, but other than that, anything to be aware of?
It thins out. It does thin out. The options at the top, and Paul Goldschmidt and Anthony Rizzo and Joey Votto, they're studs. And, you know, as I kind of allude to in the American League, you don't have the guys that run in the AL and the NL. All these guys ran. If you include Todd Frazier, who had first base eligibility last year, although most people use him at third, you had a lot of guys you could plug in at first who could run. But the other thing that really jumps out is it thins out a lot more quickly. You know, you get down to the, I think it's the 11th name on the list, and it's Ryan Howard, who earned $13 last year. That's fine for an only, but you really want it to be careful, because if you missed at this position, you missed badly.
Yeah. George, any thoughts before we move forward?
No, I mean, Mike hit on it. The three or four guys who earned double digits all stole double digit bases. So speed's definitely a huge factor, and I think one of the things we're going to get into, but the divide between Goldschmidt and Rizzo, and that's to me one of the more compelling things to watch this spring is, and this upcoming season, is how close are those guys really? Because I think it's a lot closer than people think now.
All right. So getting to 2016 here, just as a general sense, is first base a position that, you know, we talked about this with catcher last week, and you know, we generally tended to be on the same page about waiting for a catcher to find value, but is first base deep enough and without you know, a really strong underbelly of the top tier? Is first base in that position as well, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I think certainly in a mixed league you can do it. I think certainly in a deeper mix you can wait, and there's some quality options there. I would also go as far as to say if you are playing in a 15-team mixed league, first base is probably where you're going to want to be getting your corner infielder from. And trying to go with two first basemen and a third baseman, you know, unless you dip in early for some reason and, you know, wind up with Josh Donaldson and, you know, somebody else who's fairly decent. So, yeah, I would say that it's still a pretty viable strategy just looking down at this list of first basemen to, you know, go 15 deep in a mix. And there's still some pretty solid names on here.
It certainly looks like there's a premium being paid right now for the top six or seven guys. When I wrote up the early ADP analysis article, which is up at Baseball Prospectus right now, if you go check it out, the top seven guys at first base right now are all going in the top three rounds. And then there's kind of a drop-off before you hit Adrian Gonzalez and Eric Hosmer, who are going in about the sixth or seventh round in 12-team leagues. So there's certainly a premium on those specific guys at the top of the class that it's hard to argue against making the investment that early on those guys, because it seems like they're all worth it.
All right, so that transitions nicely into the beginning of our tier group. So this week at Baseball Prospectus, the first base tiers and rankings were done by JP Breen. So those are up right now when you're listening to this. We are looking at the behind the scenes version. So we have three guys here in the five star group. I think it's fair to say that is consensus. If you were to ask other owners, other experts. But I want to get a better feel how closely grouped these guys are and how you view Miguel Cabrera and Anthony Rizzo against each other. George, you were getting into talking about Anthony Rizzo a little bit before, so I'll let you give your thoughts here, and then we'll jump in.
Sure. Well, just looking at the early ADP data from NFBC leagues, which are 15-team leagues, Goldschmidt's going on average second behind Trout, and then Rizzo's going 11th, so that's towards the back half of the first round. And really, Goldschmidt, I mean, what more can you say? He's one of the safest five-category foundational building blocks that you can get, so it's certainly worthwhile to take him in the top three. But I think Rizzo is generating a bit of hype right now because people see that loaded Cubs lineup. Rizzo's had back-to-back 30 home run campaigns. He's only 26 years old. You look at mixed leagues last year, only Goldschmidt and Joey Votto earned more. And the real thing that I think separates Rizzo from a lot of the other options, if you want to talk about guys who are coming after him, and Cabrera, Encarnacion, Abreu, I think the speed. Rizzo stole 17 bases last year, and only Goldschmidt had more at the position. So I think there's still some upside here with Rizzo, where this is, you're looking at a guy who certainly is the number two guy behind Goldschmidt, but I think he's sort of right there, and he's entering his prime. He could finish right there with Goldschmidt from an earnings standpoint in 2016, and it really wouldn't shock me. So I really like Rizzo, and I think at the back end of the first round, that's not a bad pick at all.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Cabrera and Rizzo, and I guess, and Goldschmidt as well? But
to chime in on what George said, I Goldschmidt, we're looking right now at Jeff Bagwell 2.0 in terms of the numbers he's putting up, and that includes those steals. He's just so far ahead of everyone else. And what I will say about Cabrera and Rizzo, I don't necessarily disagree with George. I think Rizzo could take a leap forward. But the funny thing about Rizzo, and I think Matthew Trueblood over, at the main site here at Baseball Prospectus noticed this, and Matthew is a bit of a Cubs homer and certainly, kind of comes out pro Cubs. You notice after the first 6 weeks that Rizzo's numbers were very good, but a lot of those numbers that he put up were the benefit of a very strong streak at the beginning of the year. And I believe that his OPS, when you take that strong streak out, was kind of closer to, I'm trying to look it up now, but it was kind of closer to a number that was still very solid. But it isn't something, if you looked at it, you'd be like, oh my God, Anthony Rizzo is a stud. This isn't to take anything away from him. I think he's valued fairly here. But I do wonder more than you do, George, whether he is going to take that step forward. And here it is. In his last 123 games, he had an 846 OPS. That's really solid, and that's something you look at from a first baseman. You're like, wow, it's really good. It just doesn't necessarily speak to that elite level. And I do wonder with people approaching him differently and knowing that he's the man in that lineup, if that's going to have a bit of an impact on him. Miggy, I kind of like for the bounce back a little bit more this year. I think he's going to hit some more home runs. I actually have Miggy a little bit ahead of Rizzo. This is obviously for redraft and for Roto. In a dynasty, I'd still prefer Rizzo at this point, given their ages.
Yeah, I'm with Mike on this one. I think that the steals are kind of throwing people off with Rizzo, and it's kind of having him in the conversation with Goldschmidt and Cabrera are kind of messing with people's perceptions. The steals for Goldschmidt are just make him above and beyond the incredible fantasy superstar that he is. Rizzo's steals are really helpful, but the difference in batting average between what I think we can expect from Miguel Cabrera and what we can expect from Anthony Rizzo is significant enough that I just don't think those steals make up. I don't think those steals make up for it. And I don't think he has another gear in steals. I don't think he can steal 25 bases next year. In fact, I think he'd be hard pressed to sustain the pace he's on now. I don't know what Pecota has him projected for in steals for next year, but my personal expectation for him is somewhere in the 10 to 12 range. Anything above that, I think, is kind of gravy. All right. So any more thoughts on the five-star guys before we move on?
There's only three of them, so I think we pretty much covered that ground.
There's a reason they're the five-star tier. They're all really, really good.
That's true. What do you think is the floor? I was talking about this before we got cut off, but what do you think is the floor for Miguel Cabrera's power in 2016?
Well, isn't it a question of how many plate appearances he gets? Because last year he only had, 500? I think if he's healthy the whole year, I think his floor is like at least 25, 28. Like, I can't see him hitting fewer than that in a full season.
Yeah, 25 was the number that popped into my head.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the floor on his batting average?
300?
Yeah. It's not. I don't think he's going to hit 338 again. I mean, if he does, it's going to be with less power.
He could hit 290, but just a realistic floor is probably like 300.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I have that a little bit higher. I think his floor is probably around 315, 320. I think that's happening.
Well, no, to be clear, I think that's happening. But if you're asking me what the floor is, you know, with you know, Babbitt, Fluke, and whatnot, I'm thinking.
All right, fine. Bad.
You asked us for the floor, Brett. Come on.
Bad choice of words. Bad choice of words.
The range of outcomes is closer to 320.
What's the lowest realistic outcome that you're drafting him for?
Yeah, the price I have him at, I see what you're saying, Brett. It's probably 310 is the lowest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all. I would certainly rather have him than Anthony Rizzo, but let's move into the four-star tier. So now we get three guys who, like George mentioned before, are getting drafted pretty close to each other, right, at this point, with Joey Votto being at the head of our rankings, but I think being drafted behind both Abreu and Encarnacion.
Yeah, he's actually going Chris Davis, too. So he's actually seventh right now in ADP at pick 34. So that's like the third round in a 12-team league.
Well, let's not get crazy and mix positions here, but but yes, does Joey Votto deserve to be drafted almost a full round later than Encarnacion and Abreu?
No, I have him actually a little bit ahead of those guys, but that's probably because I have, you know, as you know, if you've listened to the show, a healthy respect for batting average. You know, where you might be concerned with Votto is that lineup's not quite as good. He's going to be losing, you know, he lost some people around him. There could be some other trades. But all that being said, Joey Votto's a stud. He's just an incredible player. He brings so much to the table. And we've kind of seen this with him year in, year out. Even though he doesn't drive in, you know, 110 runs or score 110 runs, he's still a stud. He earned what Rizzo earned last year. And from a fantasy perspective this year, because of that batting average, I actually have as much confidence in Votto as I do in Rizzo. If JP had elected to include Votto in the five-star tier, I wouldn't have blinked. I think he's fine here in the four-star tier for the reasons I cited, but I am ahead of those guys.
Okay. George, what about you?
Yeah, if you're looking for the best value at first base, at least among the top six names that we've covered so far, it's definitely Votto. When you look at the ADP, I think people aren't buying into a repeat, whereas, like Mike said, the only real issue for him is health, and he's back fully healthy, and he's productive, and he's a flat out stud. So yeah, I'm on board with the Votto train. The guy I really like is Jose Abreu. I just think he's fantastic, and one of the things that he's sort of done is he's hit 30 home runs in back to back seasons, and he's adjusted really well to how people have approached him. I think more so in his rookie season than anything, where he had a ton of home runs early, and then he just started getting on base a crazy amount in the second half. So I just think Abreu's pretty stable, and I think opinions vary on him. So it's going to be interesting to see where he kind of goes in leagues, because I think he's gone, in looking at the NFBC data, he's gone as early as pick 16 and as late as pick 30 in drafts this year. So I think he's kind of one of the variable guys I'm watching in that second to third round, where if he slips a little bit, I'd be all over him.
Makes sense. So does Encarnacion feel to does Encarnacion feel like the overdraft here among these top two tiers? Does this feel like the player that you are likely not going to own?
Yeah, based on where he's going right around pick 22. So that's, yeah. I feel like I'd rather wait a little bit. It's going to depend where you're picking in the first two or three rounds. I think that has more to do with it than anything. But someone's more likely to snap up Encarnacion before the other guys, like Abreu or Votto, and that's where I think I'd be more comfortable waiting on those two than reaching.
He is the guy when you put it that way. But I think when you go through these top six players, and you know, maybe you can include Davis here too, I think that if I had to pick a guy, it's Encarnacion. But they're, to me, taking Encarnacion 22 as opposed to say 32 or 35, it's kind of splitting hairs. It's not like he's being drafted, you know, say two or three rounds ahead of where he should be going. So, you know, to answer your question, Brett, yes, but I can't fault somebody for taking him where he's going.
Mm-hmm. So the three-star tier is bulkier here, and it has some names that we're accustomed to seeing ranked higher. Do you think that Adrian Gonzalez should be considered a four-star guy? And if not, do you consider him close, Mike?
I don't think he's close. There's some separation here. The guy I would consider including if you're going to go this route, because we talked about this a little bit before, is Eric Hosmer. But when I look at the players in this tier, this is where I see some separation. The difference to me between Adrian Gonzalez and the four-star guys and certainly the five-star guys is that there was a time when Gonzalez could put up those elite power numbers. He's just not going to do that anymore. And because he's not going to do that, I don't want to pay him or consider paying him like a four-star player. And, you know, to kind of jump back to ADP, you know, we look at some of these average, you know, price points. You know, these other guys are being taken like 36, you know, going through like second, you know, from overall for Goldschmidt to 36. The drop to Adrian Gonzalez, he's going 70th overall. I think that's an appropriate drop.
Mike touched on it, but he's now 33. I think he's become more of a line drive hitter. I mean, if you look at his batted ball profile last year, I think it's something that Keith Cromer touched on when we posted our first base targets piece. But he had one of the highest line drive rates of his career last year, and that was, you know, accompanied by a home run to fly ball rate, which was one of his highest in the last 5 or 6 years. So I don't think there's a huge uptick in power from that standpoint coming here for Gonzalez. I think as he ages, we're going to see, you know, a little bit of a decline here from a power standpoint. So, you know, it's hard to, you know, look at him as a potential four-star guy when there's not a whole lot of upside that you can project in his profile this year.
Well, the upside you can project is the batting average upside, right? Not the power upside.
Yeah.
Given his line drive ability and his generally strong contact ability, I mean, he's been right around 275 both of the last 2 years, but before that he was, you know, consistently a at or near 300 hitter. If you believe that he can approach 300 again, then that makes his, you know, likely mid-20s power much more appealing, even though he's probably not going to score as many runs as some of the other guys around him. I don't think he's that close to that tier. There's a route for him there. I just don't think there's enough oomph to get there. I mean, he'd really have to hit 290 plus and clear 100 RBI pretty easily in order to get that overall package up there to the four-star tier. And while it's certainly possible, there are some impediments there. So let's talk about some of the other guys. And some of these are some DH only players who we have mixed in with our rankings here. Let's talk about sort of the old versus the new. David Ortiz versus Miguel Sano. Both of these guys are going to have DH only eligibility. They both have quite a bit of power. Is this finally the crossroads point for them? I mean, we know it's Ortiz's last year, but would you rather have him in 2016 than Miguel Sano? Mike?
I'd rather have Sano. I know it's the upside play. I know he's going to – he probably should slip somewhat this year in batting average, but looking at what Poppy's done the last couple of years – he hasn't declined certain, but by any stretch of the imagination, and he is who he is, and I'm not predicting decline, but I want the upside here. I want the power upside that you're looking at with Sano. He had 18 home runs in 279 at-bats last year. It's not really a stretch, even if the average goes down, to think that he could hit 30 to 35 home runs. I want the power out of the slot, and I'll kind of take my chances with the batting average.
It's funny, you watch Sano and you think of a right-handed David Ortiz, like a younger version. It's kind of a little bit crazy. The swings are similar. I like Sano. I'm with Mike here. I'd take a shot on the power, on the upside. I think at some point, you know, we've been saying this for years with David Ortiz, but you know, you think, all right, this is the year, it's going to happen, and instead he's hit 30 home runs and driven in 100. Three straight years. He's had 29 home runs in 5 of the last 6 years. You can't really bet against Ortiz, and I think he's going to go out with another pretty good year this year. I'd feel comfortable saying that, but you want the upside, and Sano's got that type of win-your-league upside that, yeah, he could be an absolute monster this year, and he's not going to break the bank on draft day, I don't think.
The other thing I just want to point out quickly is that, you know, for years, people were saying about Derek Jeter, he wasn't going to fall off, he wasn't going to fall off. And when he finally did, it was ugly. Even if it's a 5% or 3% chance, because of Ortiz's age, there is that chance.
Oh, absolutely. You go to Baseball Reference and look up guys who've hit more than 30 home runs after the age of 40, and it's a list that pretty much doesn't exist. So that's a valid point, but it feels like we've said this for years with Ortiz, and he's just.
Oh, I don't even want to say it because it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah,
but that's why I'm saying
he defies logic almost. Well, it's weird.
Probably in reality, it's, you know, for a real person, it would be a 70% chance. But I'm saying even for Ortiz, just because of his age, you know, you have to kind of factor that in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to remain cognizant of, but if anyone's going to defy those odds, it's Ortiz. It's weird, but yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
I mean, it seems really it seems funny when we talk about this that that you guys are talking about Sano's power upside and then talking about what that power upside is. I mean, if Sano hit 37 home runs and drove in 108 runs, is that the upper tier of what you think you could expect from him this year?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's tough because we haven't seen an extended sample at the major leagues. He only had, what, last year? 335 plate appearances.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a chance he regresses a little bit. Is that at all a possibility, or am I crazy? Because we always think, like...
Of course it is.
Well, no,
the league's going to adjust to him, so, I mean...
We talked about this with Ben and Craig on the last episode of Tino. There is this sort of bubble of rookies that were awesome, and we know historically that some of them are going to kind of suck this year, and nobody knows who they are. And Sano could be one of those guys. He could hit 40 home runs, or he could end up back in the minors in June. And there's, you know, I think there have been so many rookies that have done so well. I think people are forgetting the basement for some of these guys. I'm taking Ortiz over Sano this year. I don't think the expected drop off with Ortiz is enough to make me not do it. I also get mildly concerned about young players who make really weird position switches and how they bring it to the plate. We've seen this in the past with a couple of guys, it's just one of those things where you want to have these young hitters with as clear of a head as possible coming up at the plate. And if they're focused on playing a position that they're not comfortable with, then that is, that's one of those things that just happened. I mean, just look at Kyle Schwarber last year. Look at Kyle Schwarber when he was playing catcher, when Miguel Montero was out, and then look at his stats when he was playing left field. It's one example, and it's small sample size within that example, but you get other things too. You have all the talk of Xander Bogaerts and his comfortability between playing shortstop and third base. There are many, many examples. Who knows what the Twins are going to do? They, without a trade, they're probably still going to try Sano in the outfield, which would be good for his eventual eligibility, because he'd probably pick up that outfield eligibility pretty quickly. But he also may just not be able to play outfield at all. And if he can't, then, he's probably going to be the DH because Bianco Park, who we'll get to, sucks. But that's neither here nor there. I guess it is kind of here. But, there's clouds of uncertainty around Sano in 2016. And I really, really like him long term. There's some thoughts in the back of my head on that one as I try to keep myself from getting too excited about him. So moving on from Ortiz, the two big names in the three star group are Prince Fielder and Albert Pujols. At least as far as guys who used to be much higher on the scale and now reside in this range. They are both being taken generally in the 7th-8th round range. Mike, we took Albert Pujols in labor last year in the turn at the end of the third, beginning of the fourth round. I think he was technically our fourth round pick, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And how many home runs did Albert Pujols hit last year?
It's 40 on the nose, I believe.
On the nose. And his stock is going down precipitously. Is this, does it deserve to go down precipitously? I mean, we don't know what his ADP is going to be in mid-March, but if his ADP is still in the seventh, eighth round, does that feel right to you?
Well, you know, right now, to me, I think the question has more to do with when he comes back and, you know, how soon he comes back, you know, what he looks like in the cage, how quickly he can get back to live action. You know, he had surgery this winter, I think, to remove like a, you know, he had his foot injury. It was affecting him driving. He said he couldn't drive, you know, the ball, and you could see it in the way he was hitting. If he's healthy, I think he's going too late. And even though there should be some slippage because of age, you know, a lot of what he suffered last year was because of that injury. Now that being said, you know, what kind of concerns me with a player like Albert and his profile, he went from being somebody who was really healthy in his 20s, you know, missing some games here and there to be sure, to kind of getting hurt quite a bit in his 30s. And, you know, I know you guys like him, and I like him too, but he is reaching that age where these injuries kind of tend to mount, and you go from missing a day or two to missing a week or two and spending some time in the DL. So I think the market's being cautious. Do I think they're being overly cautious? I think they're being a little bit too cautious, but I can also see why the caution's warranted.
My sort of stance on Albert Pujols is, you know, embrace the risk, but pay for the floor. And I think that's sort of where his value is right now, because the perception is that, you know, he's a guy who just turned 36 over the weekend, but, you know, he's an aging slugger, the plate discipline's eroded, you know, any sort of regression in his home run to fly ball rate, and he's just not going to be very good. I think it's just how the general fantasy population is perceiving him right now. And you look at last year, and it's like, right now, if he's going in the seventh, eighth round, you're not paying for 40 home runs again. Pecota really is down on him this year, but it's still projecting him for a 262 average, 323 on base, 470 slugging. And he's hit 30 home runs in 13 of the last 15 years. So if you're telling me he's going to hit 262 with 30 home runs, that's more than enough, you know, to justify, you know, a seventh, eighth round pick where he's going. I'm fine with that. He's good.
Does it make a difference that he's likely going to get most of his time at DH this year with CJ Cron probably playing first base more often than not?
This goes back to narrative. We have no data to back this up, but some guys, they like the routine of playing the field, and other guys can't stand it. So I don't know what camp Pujols is going to fall into, whether it's going to benefit him to stay off the field and to focus exclusively on hitting. You know, it could, but at the other end, maybe it takes him out of his rhythm a little bit, and he struggles coming out of the gate. So it's one of those things we're not going to know until it happens, and it's going to be all hindsight. But that's something to factor in, absolutely.
So the other guy who falls into this category, and this is really fascinating, is Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder last year was being taken 62nd overall on average in final end of draft season 2015 ADP. A lot of that was a lot of that drop that was there was because he was coming off the neck surgery. Nobody knew how he would react, how healthy he would stay. There was a lot of risk baked in there. Prince Fielder played 158 games in 2015, was quite good considering he really hadn't played much in 2014, early ADP indicates that he's being rewarded by being drafted almost a full round later than he was in 2015. Does this make sense to anybody?
fielder is a DH only, and that does impact value for some where they want to have that flexibility. They don't want to be locked in a position, particularly if there are injuries to a non-fielder player and they can't cycle guys in and out. But I think the second and more important thing is that he came back and he did well, but people want that 30 home run power from their first baseman. They're not looking at the full package. They're not looking at the batting average. They're not looking at what else he did. They're not looking at the fact that he stayed on the field, which in a 15-team mix, which NFBC is important. So he has a skill set where even if the power doesn't come back a little bit this year, and to your point, Brett, I think it could come back a little bit because, you know, it's going to be his second full season. The rust will be off. People just aren't, you know, counting on that. And, you know, between Fielder and Pujols, given their ages and given where they are and, you know, given the park that Fielder's in, I think I like Fielder a little bit better this year in terms of somebody who could outproduce that ADP and really, you know, give a push on that value.
Yeah, he's going to be, I think, the guy that I really like out of this group. Just because we know about the neck injury, but Fielder was just an absolutely remarkably consistent player as far as staying on the field and making contact. The power has kind of jumped around a little bit, but he's settled as a pretty consistent 30 home run guy. And, you know, the contact rate was still wonderful when he came back. He only struck out 88 times and 2015 in almost 700 plate appearances, which for a power hitting first base, it's still his contact ability is still completely ridiculous. And you know, the safety of his batting average compared to the safety of the power of some of the players around him, and the safety of the carrying fantasy tool of all of them, especially in our low batting average environment, is really being understated. And, you know, yes, there's absolutely the possibility that Fielder can come back. And would it surprise any of you if Fielder hit 35 home runs this year? I mean, no one's going to pay for it in drafts, but that wouldn't surprise you guys, right?
No.
Maybe mildly. I'm thinking more 30, but so, you know, if I'm thinking 30 to 32, 35 mm-hmm. would at most be a mild surprise.
Well, at the expense of some contact, I think he could hit more home runs if he just sold out and tried to swing for the fences on some occasions. Yeah, that's 35 is not unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. But a guy who I think has a really, really good chance of hitting 300 and hitting 25 home runs should not be going in this range, even if they're first base eligible and will steal zero bases like Prince Fielder will, and won't be. I mean, he's not a guy who scores a ton of runs. He's averaged, you know, in his last three full seasons, he's averaged about 80 runs scored. But I mean, you're not talking about someone who you're taking in the second round, who you would expect to have a more meaningful contribution across the board. You know, Fielder's really good, and people seem to be forgetting that at the moment, and they shouldn't.
I mean, if you strip out the names and the narrative attached to these older guys between Fielder, Pujols, and Ortiz, and just look at the raw numbers, they stack up as just huge values later on in drafts compared to some of the guys. I mean, look at like Freddie Freeman's going ahead of Fielder and Pujols and Ortiz, which is mm-hmm. absurd to me. I don't get that.
Yeah. So let's keep going. I want to make sure we get to the guys sort of at the towards the bottom of this tier, because they get a little interesting down there. Not that they're not interesting up here, but you know what I mean. The next tier, is there anyone else you guys want to hit on before we move down to the two stars?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. Nah. So the two star tier is really, really large, and is a really healthy combination of players who had surprisingly positive years in 2015 and some players who had not many players who had surprisingly negative years, but some players who we don't really consider to be really all that impressive from a fantasy standpoint, players who people tend not to believe in all that much, even though they have some modicum of continued success. We see how these are ranked right now for what JP put together. But Mike, if you're taking one guy in this two-star tier before any of the others, who is it?
Huh. Well, you know, this is like probably the usual cop out here, but and I know that, you know, there were some on our staff, we debated this, who didn't like him, but I still really like Lucas Duda. And you know, it's funny, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before with Pujols. I think Lucas Duda is a guy, you know, who has a chance, and I'm not saying he's going to do it, but he's a guy in this tier who has a chance to hit 30 home runs. And you know, he might the average might not be pretty. He might only hit 240, but he also might hit 260. I just don't see another person in this tier with the possible exception of maybe like a Mark Trumbo, who, you know, could hit 30 home runs, but everything has to go right for, or A-Rod, who, you know, I know he did it last year, but the age just kind of scares me with him a little bit. Dude is the guy that I want in this tier. He's just somebody who, I know you have to live with the streaks. You know, we did it in Labor last year. I did it in Tout. But he's just somebody I like. You know, I also like the fact that, you know, even without Yoenis Cespedes, the Mets are once again going to be good this year.
Hopefully.
don't do this. Don't do this.
The pitching will be good.
I think the whole team will be good.
This is a different show altogether now. George, what about you?
Mike mentioned guys hitting 30 home runs, but you left out Evan Gattis, who had 27 last year, and he owns one of the weirdest stats in all baseball, in that he had 11 triples last year, which makes no sense if you've ever watched even 30 seconds of highlights of Evan Gattis. I think, you know, in Houston, it was his first season there. You know, Brett, you talked about it, but changing leagues, I think that adjustment is tough on guys sometimes. And I think another year, they cleaned out Chris Carter, so the everyday at-bats are going to be there for Gattis. If he's DH only, he's going to stay healthy. I think he's going right now. He's going after Byung-ho Park. He's outside the top 200 picks overall. I know it's early ADP, but he's not getting any love from anybody. And I know he's a util-only slugger, but it's hard to just dismiss those numbers from Gattis from a power standpoint that late in a draft when there's just not a whole lot of great options left at the position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Gattis too. I didn't really mean to leave him off for any specific reason.
No, I know, but yeah. Sorry, Mike.
That's okay. Yeah,
it's a millennial thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is now the part of the show where I lament Adam Lind going to Seattle. I genuinely love Adam Lind. He is just such an underrated hitter. And I think he's going to continue to be a very good hitter in Seattle. But unfortunately, due to his surroundings, his fantasy stock is not going to be what it once was. And that makes me sad. But if we're going for power in this tier, I'm going to lean Mark Trumbo here over Duda and Gattis. Putting Trumbo in Baltimore is just sounds really, really fun. They don't have any depth in that organization, so he's going to play, and that is a really, really nice place to hit if you're a power hitter. he's 2 years removed from two consecutive 30 home run seasons in Anaheim, which is a really, really hard task. He hit nine home runs in Arizona in 46 games, which is his really his only experience in a his time in Arizona is his only experience in a hitter's park. I think the odds are somewhat decent that Trumbo clears 30 home runs this year, and he won't really do anything else besides that, but you don't really need him to.
I have two fun Trumbo related stats. Our colleague Greg Wallmeyer, he wrote a piece in September on re-examining park factors, and Camden Yards is the number one park in the American League for runs scored and home runs for right-handed batters. And an Orioles hitter has led the majors in home runs in each of the last 3 years. Chris Davis twice and Nelson Cruz the other. So if you're looking for a sleeper that's not named Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo to lead the majors in home runs. But
yeah, there are some names that are pretty interesting here. Let's talk about the one guy who seems like the player in this tier who lowered his stock the most in 2015, and that's Ryan Zimmerman. We know who Zimmerman can be when he's healthy, and at this point we know that he is healthy not often. Zimmerman is still going to play. This is still amazing. He's like one of my favorite players to do this with. Ryan Zimmerman, how old do you think Ryan Zimmerman is?
33? I don't know.
I was going to say 32.
He's going to play the entire season at 31.
Okay.
He's like the opposite of Marco Estrada. No matter how old he gets, he's always younger than you think he is. Just like Estrada is like 45 years old. We won't go there. But Marco Estrada is super old. Ryan Zimmerman is young, but has the body of a 50-year-old. He played in 95 games last year, 61 games the year before. If you add them together, that's a pretty decent showing. And that's a 146 game season, but 156 game season. But you can't add them together. He did hit 16 home runs and drove in 73 runs in 95 games last year. He did it with a diminished batting average, but you know, batting average is kind of the one thing I'm really not all that concerned with Zimmerman about, because he's a pretty consistent, decent contact guy. I think he's a pretty, barring weird error bar swings, he's a pretty decent bet to be in the 270 to 275 range. But there's really no knowing how many games he's going to play in a non-deep league. Where do you guys feel comfortable gambling on Ryan Zimmerman? Is he going to be the type of player who you draft comfortably in a shallower league in 2016, knowing that you'll be able to go to the waiver wire when he does get hurt?
Well, you know, in a shallow league, there's just guys I'd rather have. Like, there's nothing. This is really anything against Zimmerman, but there's just players, I guess, with more upside. Like, I'd rather go with somebody like Will Myers or Ben Paulson playing in Colorado than I would Zimmerman.
See, that's the thing. I'd rather have him in a deeper league. Where I can kind of wait and know that there is some upside there if he's going to stay on the field, as opposed to gambling on, let's say, Justin Bour, Adam Lind, Mitch Moreland, Byung Ho Park, those types of guys. I think I feel better about
Zimmerman.
There's
just a lot of guys at this position that I feel have upside as well, where, you know, if they flame out, I can go out and pick somebody else. Whereas I know Zimmerman also has upside, but, you know, to your point, Brett, I'm just not, because of the injury history, I'm just not counting on more than, say, 100 games from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys stole my next question, but he's ranked in this tier towards the top. Would you rather game? Just assume a 15 team league. Would you rather have Ryan Zimmerman or Mark Teixeira? Mike?
I'd rather have Teixeira.
Would you rather have Ryan Zimmerman or Mitch Moreland?
I think I'd lean Zimmerman.
Okay. And would you rather have Ben Paulson than Ryan Zimmerman?
Yes, I'd rather have Paulson, and just because of the Colorado factor.
Okay.
See, I go no there.
Okay.
Yeah, I go no there as well. I get why you want to say yes. I don't trust that Paulson's going to be long for that job.
Especially if they have four left-handed hitting outfielders on opening day.
Well, they're going to trade.
That's the Rockies for you. Something is going to happen.
You think they're going to do something?
Well, I mean, do they really have to do anything anyway? I mean, no. The two of those outfielders are Carlos Gonzalez and Corey Dickerson.
But just wait until May for somebody to get hurt, is what you're saying. Once again, we veered off first base. This is a fun show.
Wait until the second week of March for someone to get hurt. I mean, that's not a healthy crowd. I mean, I love that Colorado outfield, but it's not the healthiest crew.
Sorry to get you off on a tangent.
No more tangents. So does anyone do you guys want to talk about anybody else in this tier? We've covered most of this tier at this point, right?
Yeah. We're gonna look terrible when Byung-ho Park hits 30 home runs.
Well, you guys will look fine. I'm gonna look terrible, and I don't care.
He's not gonna hit 30 home runs, though.
No, I know, but
he might over the course of his contract. In career,
I like him.
People are drafting him,
but he's not gonna hit 30 home runs this year. I mean, that's not happening.
He's getting drafted in these early drafts. Because
now I'm sure he's gonna do it since we're all saying this. So that's just the way it goes.
He might. I mean, he's a baseball player who owns a bat and has some power. It's possible. There is a chance. But no. There's too much swing and miss there against too much bad pitching. And There's much better pitching in Major League Baseball. This is not Jose Abreu. No one's saying that he's Abreu, but it's that sort of philosophy where you look at his stats in the KBO and you're like, oh, this guy was one of the best hitters in the KBO. Best hitters translate across leagues, right? Look at Jose Abreu. He was the best hitter in Cuba, and he's a really good hitter in Major League Baseball. That is not what is happening here. Please.
Yeah, I think the guy you probably want to look at if you want to make a comparison is Jung-ho Kang. But the thing to keep in mind with Kang, to your point, Brett, is that Kang didn't nearly have the swing and miss profile that Park does.
And also, he plays shortstop, so there's a much lower threshold for power to be relevant in a mixed
league. Well, there is, but I'm just saying if you look at like to me to kind of do the power in doing the power comp with Kang and then Park, I think Kang his last year in Korea hit what like 40 home runs, maybe a little bit below that.
Yep, he hit 40.
He hit 40 and he hit 15 last year. So looking at Park, you know, I'm kind of looking at 53 and thinking, okay, like the upside's 20 to 25. But then to Brett's point, what makes me nervous about that, it's like, well, you know, that's well and good, except you're looking at a lot more strikeouts than Kang had. So there is that risk that pitchers just aren't going to throw him anything to hit.
Yep. They might not need to throw strikes.
Right. Which, you know, honestly, given the risk that the Twins are, you know, it's a $12 million contract over, what, 4 years? It's not a huge risk. And if he doesn't work out, I don't think they're going to have an egg on their face because it's not a lot of money. But, no. Yeah, there's a lot of risk there. And, well, I think there's some upside. It's attached to enough bad batting average that it's not as much upside as some people are thinking.
Speaking of eggs, can we talk about Greg Bird yet?
Patience, grasshopper.
We can. I really wanted to talk about Eric Thames and Yameiko Navarro, though.
Not again.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we've done Eric Thames before, so I want to bring a new one into this because I'm having too much fun with this. Anyone want to guess what Yameiko Navarro? You remember Yameiko Navarro? Does that name sound familiar?
Red Sox,
yeah,
right?
I remember him.
Are you a Red Sox prospect kind of?
Yameiko Navarro was a, and I'm gonna hide this so that I can just see his major league stats. He had a brief cup of coffee with the Red Sox. He is a career 206, 258, 267 middle infielder in 199 plate appearances.
Is that good?
Over a few seasons. You know, it's pretty good, right? Anyone want to play guess Yameiko Navarro's line in the KBO last year?
We have to do a KBO fantasy league. I really want to.
I saw this line when I was doing research for Park, so I don't know if I should play. So I'll leave this to George.
Dibs on William Opeña. I don't know if he's in the KBO or not. I'm going to say 35.
Yameiko Navarro hit 287, 393, 596, had 48 home runs, 137 RBI.
What?
Yeah,
and stole 22 bases.
Yeah,
he was almost
as
good.
The steals, yeah.
The Mike Trout of the KBO.
He was almost as good as Eric Thames, who's the Barry Bonds of the KBO. But we're digressing.
Yeah,
oh
we're
my
really
God.
Going off on a tangent here. We're not doing the KBO podcast tonight.
I know.
That was pretty awesome, though.
So let's move on. Actually, one more thing about Navarro. He hit 48 home runs last year. Anyone want to guess how many doubles he had?
Oh, God. Let's see. 52.
19.
Oh.
I was going to guess 11. I was going to guess 26.
19. Oh, those fences and those
I'm wondering
balls,
where those
man.
Fences are.
How many strikeouts?
72. 93 walks, 72 strikeouts.
That's not as many as I thought.
Can we get management to like send us to Korea for a week to watch baseball?
Maybe.
That could be fun.
We could do our next VP
event in South Korea.
I know. I'm gonna talk to the guys at BAM and see if I can get a KBO. See if they can get a partnership going so I can get KBO games on my MLB.TV package. All right, let's go. It's the one star tier time. I don't know, George. You probably didn't see JP's last note about the additions to the three-star tier group.
The one-star tier.
We're the one that we're working on right now has only three names, which is no fun, but it's actually six names. So I'm sending you the additional three names right here. Have a minute to get yourself together. We will start with you this week. Who's the one star guy that you want to claim?
And I'm going and grabbing. This is very professional here. I'm going and grabbing JP's most recent email as well because I don't think it's any of those guys, but I want to check.
And you can go off the board.
Can I go for the steal, like Family Feud style, right now?
I don't know.
Let's see here. Well, actually, the guy I'm going to go with is Chris Carter.
Damn it.
God damn it, Mike.
Son of a bee sting.
Well, you know, I look at Carter in that park, and, you know, I know he's coming from a hitter's park in Houston, but I think what he did last year is about as bad as it's going to get. They're going to play him And even if there's a little bit of bounce back in the batting average and he only hits 220 or 230, there's still the potential for close to 40 home runs out of that bat. I think it's really hard not to take him in this tier.
I was going to go with Chris Carter as well, and I'm sure Brett was, because in Miller, he could just hit a ton of home runs. Victor Martinez is going to be my pick, and I just think right now no one is going to be interested in drafting Victor Martinez. I mean, just look at what he did last year. His true average last year was, my God, 232. In 2014, it was 335. So that's how much of a drop-off he experienced. And you're investing in a guy who's now 37. He's had multiple knee surgeries. But you look at that lineup, and if he's going to hit cleanup, which I don't know if he shouldn't, but if he's going to hit cleanup behind, you know, guys like Kinsler, Cabrera, J.D. Martinez, and now Justin Upton being added to that mix, if he can do anything, I mean, he's worth a pick in a deeper mixed league or an AL only. I think he can be somewhat relevant, but the reality is that the knee injury hurt him so much. He couldn't drive the ball last year. He was ineffective switch hitting. There are some real issues here, and they're all health related, and I don't think those ever really get solved. There's a chance he just never gets it back together health-wise. So that risk is real. But if he does, the skills are there, and I think they're still intact if he can get back the ability to drive the ball. If his base is solid and he's not having any issues with the knees, that's someone to throw a dart at this late in a draft. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. That all seems reasonable.
Yeah.
So I don't like any of the other guys here to choose from, so I am going to go off the board with my pick and go with a zero-star player. Are we allowed to do that?
Greg Bird.
Did we do that last year?
I think we did.
Yeah, I would have taken Greg Bird then. Come on.
So
no, I'm kidding.
I'm going to take Greg Bird.
I hate you so much right now.
I'm kidding. No, I'm not taking Greg Bird. I'm taking Mike Napoli.
That's solid. Yeah,
I think that all of these guys down here have serious pitfalls to their value. Napoli is certainly one of them, but he's been on a downhill slide for the past couple of years, and I think that there's enough there for him to. There's enough there for him to be a 250, 240, 250-ish, 20 to 25 homer first baseman. I think that being in Cleveland, I think will help. I think he was certainly struggling towards the end of his tenure in Boston, but he kind of raked when he went to Texas towards the end of 2015. And given the options there, I would certainly rather bet on a little bit of a bounce back from Napoli than bet on Justin Bour or Jonathan Singleton or Greg Bird.
You can hear like the venom in your voice.
Yeah, I kind of dig Napoli as an endgame guy. I think there's some fun to be had there, and I think you'll know pretty quickly whether it's going to work out or not. So with first base being as deep as it is, do you guys want to talk about some a couple of deeper names before we? Before we turn things off, I mean, we can do this pretty quickly, but there are a lot of guys we haven't even gotten.
Oh, sure.
Aren't even making this list.
We should do a PSA on AJ Reed that he might be relevant this year in 2016, right?
Oh, he probably will be, unless, you know, Jonathan Singleton somehow magically turns it around.
Yeah, I think all of our disdain for Jonathan Singleton is exactly the reason why AJ Reed might very well be relevant. AJ Reed is going to be really good.
course, people said that about Jonathan Singleton too, a couple of years ago.
Of course they did, and there's always risk inherent with that. But right now, AJ Reed is the guy who hasn't sucked at the major league level yet, so he's going to be good.
Well, one of our colleagues, Wilson Karaman, who writes for the fantasy team and our prospect team. Yeah, he saw him a bunch in the Cal League, and he just raved about the guy. Said he's just unbelievable, and there's nothing fluky about the numbers he put. Obviously, it's a hitter's league, and there's some extreme parks out there, but there's nothing fluky about the numbers AJ Reed put up last year. And he's a college hitter. I think he was at Kentucky. Played first base. He's good. And obviously, the concern is he has 237 plate appearances above high A. I think it's asking a lot for him to step into the majors right away if Singleton is hitting like .180. And
yeah, in the segment of this podcast that gets Mike and I mildly depressed, guess who drafted and did not sign AJ Reed in the 2011 draft? Mike,
would be the Mets.
That would be the New York Mets. So we got
we have Dom, so we're all good.
Yeah, the Mets have future superstar Dominic Smith.
I think
he's either going to be a really good first baseman, or he's totally going to win that Coney Island hot dog eating contest.
Why not both?
Could be both. Maybe at the same time.
Oh my god!
It's on July 4th. Do they have a homestand? Do they have a homestand around July 4th?
I don't know off the top of my head. I haven't looked.
I don't know either. I kind of want to talk about Joe Mauer for a second, mostly just to be sad, but it really is still surprising that this quickly Mauer has gone from someone who was a just consistent fantasy superstar to complete fantasy afterthought. He did get to double digits in homers last year, but the weirdest thing here is that he doesn't hit for average anymore, and that was supposed to be the one thing he did forever. Last year, if you would have told me that he would have finished with 10 home runs and 66 RBI, I would have thought he was, a half decent corner infield guy in most, medium sized mixed leagues, because I would have assumed that batting average would have been in the, around the 300 range. But he hit .265 and he hit .277 the year before that. Do you think we ever see Joe Mauer hit 300 again, regardless of any power that may or may not show? Do you think we ever see it?
In the KBO?
Wow.
I'm kidding.
No.
No?
280, maybe 290, not 300.
Yeah, I think my answer is no, too, and it just really bums me out. That's all. I'm not going to target him, but that just bums me out. I don't like it. I wish it were not the case.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. This is really a down place for us to finish.
So Greg Bird.
Should we talk about Greg Bird?
Can we for 30 seconds, seriously?
Go ahead.
No, I mean he's getting a little bit of hype right now. The reality is he's blocked right now by Teixeira. In A-Rod, and there's no clear path to playing time. He'd still have to there's Gary Sanchez there too, and he's probably going to have the advantage because he can catch as well, and he'll be the backup at least to start the season. I kind of like Greg Bird, especially if you're in an OBP league. I think what he did last year was pretty solid. He had a good stretch there to end the season, and I kind of buy into him a little bit. I know Brett, you don't, so give me the counter argument. Talk me off the ledge here with Greg Bird, because I kind of like him.
Well, the counter argument is that he I think he will strike out too much at the major league level to be anything other than a negative in batting average. He's a little bit better in on base leagues just because he does have a. It's not really a recognition issue with Bird. He likes to get deep into counts, and he doesn't have particularly great contact ability. So that's always going to lead to high strikeout totals. He hit 261 last year. I don't think there's really much improvement that you can expect on top of that. And I don't think you can't prorate that power just because there's really it's a small sample. It's September. He hit 9 home runs in September. He actually got that's sort of the funnier split than any home road thing. He actually had an OPS that was over 200 points higher on the road, and this is what you can do when you have a small sample size. But in August, Greg Bird played in 16 games and had a 721 OPS and hit 2 home runs. In September, he had a 955 OPS with 9 home runs, and September stats are not, you know, meaningless, but they're also when things kind of get weird.
Well, like Justin Bour is another one. He had 9 home runs in September, and I was looking at some of the pitchers he hit those home runs off of, and I'm like, well, I know he's going to be in the NL East, but some of those guys aren't going to be in there throwing innings, at least at the start of the year, NL East or no. So it's kind of the same concept. You've got young pitchers in there who maybe shouldn't be there, and you've got veterans on non-contenders who they aren't giving up, but they're also not trying quite as hard as they were in April. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, there's... that's a good way of putting it, because if you just look at the names of the pitchers that Bird hit home runs off of, I mean, there are some real pitchers in there.
I think he had a one off Osuna, I remember.
He hit one off Roberto Osuna. Yeah. He hit a home run off Mark Lowe, which is, you know, that's not a super easy task. He hit 2 off of Jake Odorizzi. I mean, a number of people did that this year. He hit 2 off Irvin Santana, but everyone, you got other names on here. I mean... Gene Machi, Andrew Bellotti, Tim Stauffer, Henry Owens.
By the way, I don't have it in front of me, but check out the Justin Bour 9 home runs when you get a chance. It's like Julio Teheran, Tyler Clippard twice, and then 6 really amusing guys.
Yeah, I imagine that is fun to look at.
Oh, I guess my greater point on Bird is that, like, I'm not expecting him to be a superstar. This is an AJ Reed where you can see huge ceiling here, but I don't think he's terrible. I think he can hit, and look at some of these names. I mean, like Joe Mauer, like the guys who are down in this range, like I can't get excited about them, but I can see a scenario in which Bird has a nice season if for some reason the playing time materializes midway through the year. I wouldn't rule it out entirely, which you can't say about some of these guys.
But you have to hold him until it happens.
It's not realistic, but yeah. I guess I just like the player.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That's okay, George.
You're allowed to.
Yeah, I'll believe. I'll hold the torch for Greg Bird.
It's part of the fun.
Yeah. Any Ryan Howard or Mark Reynolds supporters in the gang?
It would be fun to see Reynolds. Well, Reynolds, by the way, is eligible at third base, so that's where he'll be profiled. But you know, I know he could platoon with Paulson, but he just isn't. I just don't. You know, I know people looking at Colorado and get excited. I just don't see enough there at this point to justify more than an only pick.
Someone we didn't talk about at all, but I think it's relevant to touch on for a second. Carlos Santana's first base only, I think, now.
Yeah.
He no longer has catcher or third. He's just, like, he has to hit 27 home runs to be really relevant at first base only, right? I mean, he has to return to the level we saw in 2014 with the power.
You mean in mixed?
Yeah. Right, I mean, otherwise he's just not going to be.
He did
unless
steal.
You're in an OBP league.
He did steal some bases.
You stole 11 bases.
Yeah, I think that's everyone who I wanted to talk about. Anyone else you guys wanted to mention? Anyone want to bring up Kenneth Vargas? Anyone?
Craig's not here, so no.
That's Craig's Greg Bird.
Yeah.
We all have our Greg Bird.
Yeah, this is true.
I know Craig's not listening, so yeah.
Yeah, Craig fell asleep 20 minutes ago. we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and wrap this thing up. Thank you again for listening to episode 74 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. You have heard us talk a lot about first baseman, and if you want to see way, way more about first baseman, go to baseballprospectus.com. This week we have our positional series going on. Literally anything you could possibly want to know about the position we have covered for you. So drop on by, have some fun. And while you're there, check out all of our other great content. We've got more top 10 lists rolling out over the course of the next 6 weeks. So that's always fun as well. We will be back next week with second base. And by the end of that episode, we will be either praying for death or clawing at the walls or something along those lines. We will see you then. Enjoy the rest of your week, and that's all. Goodbye.
Take care.
Good night. was like a semi inside joke. I like it.
Yeah, it was good.
He'll never hear it either.
Yeah, no.
No, that's what's great about it.